Hello and welcome to Insights, the CAE podcast. Hello and welcome to this week's podcast. This week we're talking about the health market and how technology plays its part. An opportunity to speak to James Tromans, one of the senior directors in Dell, along with Luke Percy, one of my colleagues at CAE. Hope you enjoy it. So James, Luke, thanks for taking the time to join today. James, and actually, I guess between the three of us, we've all known each other and come across each other for a good number of years now. Luke, obviously you focus on health within CAE. James, you support data center solutions, I guess, across several verticals, but I've known you for a long time around the health sector. It was just a nice opportunity to get together and share a sort of bit of a conversation. I guess the bit that's interesting to me when we look at health is I struggle a lot of time in terms of talking about products because I'm not really too much a technologist, but I do like the outcomes and I do like the benefit they bring to customers. So I just wondered if maybe a quick introduction from you both, and I guess just be interested to hear where you're seeing technology play a useful part within health, and I guess maybe the things you think people are starting to look towards. We had obviously a bit of a chat just before we started, and as we've all said, we're still in that period of COVID lockdown at the moment, so we haven't necessarily got a normal for now, and we're not quite sure what the new normal will look like. So the things we've sort of looked towards may change in the coming weeks and months, but it'd be interesting to know, I guess, where you see the most compelling use of technology and the trends that we're looking upon that might bring value ultimately to our customers down the line. So James, Luke, if you're okay, maybe just introduce yourselves.
No problem at all. So yeah, I'm Luke Percy. I'm one of the public sector account managers here at CAE. I've been working in the public sector market space and with a particular interest in healthcare for well over 10 years now. Personally, I thoroughly enjoy working in that sector because I find it very easy to relate to. It's certainly a service that we've all encountered at various points within our lives, whether it's the birth of our children or an accident or something else. So it's very easy to relate to and find good uses for technology to kind of enable developments within that sector. So yeah, I love it.
Thanks, Luke.
Yeah, and hi guys. This is James Tromans. So I'm a data center director at Dell Technologies. We support the core account teams who work on healthcare and manage all of the lines of business there. I think we specialize specifically around data center. So we run a team of 5.5 people, but half a person up in Scotland. And for my sins, I've been working directly in the NHS for 20 years, just after Y2K, at a couple of previous companies, and 7 years at EMC, 3.5 years at Dell Tech. And same as Luke, you know, it's a really interesting market, pioneering, obviously front of mind now. But ultimately, our customers are ourselves, aren't we? Families, friends. Healthcare, NHS, it touches everything and everybody, so it's very close to all of our hearts, and it's a really interesting market to work in.
No, I particularly like that sentiment from both of you, actually, that it's sort of ultimately we are the end customer, and as you say, it is something we can all relate to because we're all conscious of the NHS and the health market around us. So again, we're just in the midst of this period of COVID. One of the things, James, I thought would be really interesting to hear about is how we've reacted. I mean, there's been a lot of press around sort of pop-up hospitals and sort of rapid site setup. Some of the companies I work with have been directly sort of supporting the testing for COVID and an outcome for COVID. I just wondered how that's experienced or that's impacted yourself and your teams.
Yeah, sure. So there's a few things there, right? I mean, you mentioned pop-up hospitals, rapid site setup, and of course then there's the regional testing as well. Around COVID. So from a Dell Technologies perspective, and remember this is across all the strategic line business as well, because within the family we have obviously VMware in there as well. If you look at things like testing, etc., we've not been directly involved. We've absolutely been working with some of our key OEM partners, that provider landscape. Who can provide the solutions around things like non-invasive nasal swab testing, etc. So we can really reduce the results period back into minutes instead of days. So we've been very much underpinning some of the the specialist partners there. If you talk about, I think you mentioned there first, James, around the pop-up hospitals and the rapid site setup. I mean, rapid site setup, I assume that you're talking about the Nightingale program?
Yeah, in particular. It's obviously been in the news. It's been really interesting to look at.
Yeah, so look, I mean, we've been heavily involved in that. You know, the centre, engaged a couple of large prime contractors, Computer Centre, DXC, to provide the, the core structure program to those regional hospitals. And we've been involved in nearly all of them from a solution point of view, providing the technology to the bedside. I mean, I suppose the most interesting one to talk about there is the first one, the one in London, the Excel Centre, where when the request came in, it was effectively to fit out a 4,000 bed hospital at the Excel within 48 hours, and effectively have working bedside IT solutions, within a ridiculously short period of time. And it was interesting because this is when, as an employee of Dell, you saw the whole of Dell get behind a program. All of our customer and partner players get behind it as well because it was coronavirus. So if you think about, we're a manufacturer. We traditionally built to order. We were able to go to some of our existing customers, one in particular, Jaguar Land Rover, and say, look, you've got inventory in the supply chain that we've built for you that is on its way. Please, can we redirect all those devices and touch points and send them to the Excel Center instead to cope with a global pandemic, and you'll have to wait your turn in the queue. So effectively, inverted commas, pinch inventory from another customer. And you know what? They absolutely were. And this happened across the board. We were able to sweat our supply chain like never seen before, but also sweat our customers and our partners, make sure that we could provide these solutions in such a ridiculously short period of time. And it was something to be proud of when you saw the results. And then, of course, we got involved in some of the other pop-up hospitals at the Manchester Central and the NEC in Birmingham and some of the others. So really exciting stuff to be involved in, right? Certainly under the pressure. I mean, the guy who runs our health team, Christian Biddle, didn't sleep for 36 hours to get that stuff done up and get it over the line, So so really, really interesting stuff. I don't know about yourself, Luke.
Yes, certainly from our perspective, we saw maybe a slightly lesser impact, but it was great to see all of those partners working together. You saw kind of multiple vendors and a reseller community all coming together to try and just facilitate whatever we could with whatever stock was available. And like you say, seeing corporate customers allowing that stock to be redistributed. We had a project in Wales where equipment was due to be rolled out to a significant number of schools across Wales, but to stand up the hospital down at the Principality Stadium. We had the agreements between the two organisations done very, very quickly, and we were able to remove and change that kit over to the Principality to stand up that hospital as well. And it's great just to see what you can do when everybody puts their heads together and goes. When everybody puts their head together and decides to work on these projects to achieve an outcome that's beyond some sort of benefit, that's actually benefit the populace as a whole, be it devices in laptops and end user devices. You've got networks, you've got wireless access points, you've got remote user systems going in, you've got collaboration tools, all of these things that are just being pulled together at such a rate. It was really impressive to kind of witness and be part of. And even now we've got the dribs and drabs of the regional programs where we're still potentially seeing impacts from the next phase of COVID. And what's that going to be with smaller kind of community hospitals turning up in colleges or, you know, community spaces where they're trying to lessen the impact on the acute hospitals. And granted, we seem to have got through the initial kind of pressures on hardware now. The supply chain seems to be back to a little bit more normality, but nonetheless we're still expecting that there's going to be opportunities in the future whereby we're going to need to react really, really quickly. And it's great to see that there's almost been a little bit of a blueprint put in place to say that if we need to do this again, we know what we're doing, and hopefully there'll be less of those 36 hour no sleeping episodes in the future anyway.
Look, I couldn't agree more with that. You know, I think you make a really good point. You know, because, you know, these emergency temporary type solutions and procurements, whilst great and we managed to get them in time, you know, what we need to get to is obviously more planned enterprise grade solutions that are ready, you know, in case, you know, COVID wave two hits or other, you know, pandemics that, you know, we're not aware of, right? I mean, you know, you talk there about, you know, the pop-up hospital moving more non-essential work from, you know, acute settings into the community or the home. You know, we did some work with some of the you know, the PACS providers. They provide, like, you know, medical imaging, those kind of folks, around architecting some emergency solutions when they were standing up the hospitals as well. It's probably worthwhile mentioning that. And we did some. We were with some customers who actually, I'm not saying they were pandemic ready, but they had their sort of business cases in place for things like rapid rollout of a virtual desktop, so that when the sort of financial constraints were removed, because that happened for a while, you know, and the director of finances was saying, you know, what do you need? Let's do it. Mm. You know, we were able to deploy an enterprise solution as opposed to laptops, because in the main, lots of laptops is what Dell in particular provided into the community. You know, we had some examples where we were able to sell and partner with trusts around, you know, large-scale VDI platforms, leveraging technology like VxRail, our hyper-converged platform. So so that was interesting.
No, I would agree, and I think moving forwards, I'm certainly expecting trusts to have a much more clearly defined view of what to happen in that scenario going forward. And also, it's kind of forced that program of works, that approach to flexible working within the hospital setting. And I think we're all agreed that the new normal is going to be very different from the old normal, so it'll be very interesting to see exactly how much of that technology that was deployed in a very short space of time will be able to sustain and encourage the kind of future development of the way people work. And I think in a lot of cases we're seeing our trusts that we're working with and speaking to at the moment are saying, actually, we're going to keep everything that we've put in place. We're going to ensure that a good percentage of that workforce is going to stay remotely, because there's actually no benefit in having them in the hospital, particularly in the acute setting. There's very little benefit to having them sitting at a desk. And yeah, it's going to be fascinating to see how that plays out over the next year or so.
One thing that was, I guess, pre-COVID, and like I say, this has been quite a seminal period in terms of how people have worked together and needed to come together in lots of settings. But pre-COVID, there was a sort of a drive towards trusts sharing services, or certainly a strategy towards trust sharing services, and having sort of, combined plans for the future. Do you think this period is now going to drive that along faster? So I guess we've all now had an experience of working closer together, or people collaborating more closely. So do you think multiple trusts will now move forward in that direction more quickly?
I'll go up I'll go first. That's right. So look, I think James, we were seeing that in some parts of the country already, right? You know, again, if you look at you know, some of the organisations who have partnered up to take joint EPR solutions, you know, we've seen some of that in the London area. We've seen that in the Northwest, where there's like a hub of Meditech customers. So we're seeing some commonality across some of the strategic transformation programs, or the STPs. I suppose that was happening. Will that accelerate now, to answer your question? Don't know. I think what we are, you know, is we are seeing trust across the STPs trying to work closer together around things like application interoperability, because if you look at you know, the BSOL initiative in the West Midlands, you know, they're partnering with InterSystems and their health share solution to you know, to share key clinical systems across the patch. Do you know what I mean? The CIOs are sort of bought into that common goal, and where we're relevant there is, I mean, not only are we an incumbent provider of infrastructure, but you know, within our healthcare team, because it is vast, you know, we have over 60 odd people working into the NHS business for us. We're a bit unique in that we have a CIO and a CTO specifically for our NHS business. So we've got a chap called James Norman who used to be a CIO in the Midlands and also for Liverpool, who works on a one-to-one level to provide industry updates, thought leadership, trends, etc. Help provide hubs and connections, because he obviously is very well connected at the centre. And we bring the likes of James and our CTO, Arshad Farhad, into the mix to help drive that collaboration, because they've sort of been there and done that in previous guises. Mm. So, you know, that is an area we do try to get more involved strategically, because we have, you know, some good industry veterans working for us. To answer your question, will it accelerate post-COVID? Yeah, one would hope so, but we're in a different world, aren't we? So it's probably watch this space. You know, I don't know what your thoughts are, Luke.
Yeah, I agree with your kind of sentiment that we're not entirely sure, but the trend is certainly moving towards more collaboration. And we're seeing trusts working more closely together, or having a joint chief exec and an executive board. Also, when you're looking at kind of the way that we've responded to COVID and the testing and the analytics that have gone into that, that has been supported by kind of regional hubs and up to the National Pathology Exchange, encouraging all of those trusts to be sharing that data so it can be analysed more quickly. It certainly seems to be breaking down more barriers and encouraging people to work more closely together, whereas I think previously you'd been kind of slowly you'd seen it happening, but now everyone's been forced to just get on and do it. Actually, I think you'll see that because they've had maybe some of the restrictions lifted, and whilst security is always paramount, they've had the opportunity just to say, just get it done. Actually, you can see what you can achieve in quite a short space of time when you're focused on the outcome rather than the challenges and the hurdles that you're gonna see. Whether or not those collaborations accelerate, I'm unsure, but they're certainly not going away. And the STPs and the ICS and the trusts that are collaborating together will see the benefit from doing that. And certainly the patients ultimately will start seeing some of the outcomes when they start investing more heavily in things like, you know, your artificial intelligence and analysing that data regionally and sending the trends, sharing that information nationally. Everyone's going to see a benefit from that.
I think as well, Luke, we've got some, you know, we've got some common customers, of course, within the NHS. I mean, and you've got obviously the CSUs and some of the regional, you know, health informatics service organisations who were there to sort of drive this sort of shared strategy across their users as well. Do you know what I mean? So, you know, we're seeing that in the St. Helens, his, and some of the work we're doing in, you know, in Merseyside as well. So, it was probably happening anyway. How quickly it accelerates, I suppose, is the ultimate question, isn't it?
And
You mentioned it a couple of times there, Luke and James. Obviously, it comes down to data. And something you've explored me before, Luke, is about actual access to data. And you mentioned to me before, certainly about personal data and how it passes through, our various stages of life, effectively, maybe through schools, through clinics, through hospitals, and there's a consistent level of, you know, record of data. Is that the ultimate goal, do you think, for bringing these technologies together, that sort of access to data and that sort of fluidity?
I would certainly like to think so. As a user of and consumer of those services, if you like, the public services that we all pay for and utilise, I think I would much rather be in a position where the one truth of me was being passed throughout all of those organisations, and they had the visibility to be able to share that data across a range of public services, be it the council, the police services, education, into the acute hospitals and community and mental health care. I think there's so many benefits to be received from doing so. I think the collaboration that we mentioned in the previous section is absolutely key for that, but also getting on board the patients and the end users, really. We have to accept that there are the benefits will outweigh the risks or the security concerns that we may have for doing that, and being able to kind of spot trends of be it regionally or nationally around where people fall from education, and then they perhaps get picked up by the police service or community and mental health service, and the impact that therefore has on the ambulance service and acute hospitals. There are absolutely trends, and being able to do true analytics on that is such a powerful thing, and it all comes back to the data at the end of the day. And with kind of partners like Dell, we do have such a strong organisation to work with on how we deal with that, where it's stored, what's it going to be done, what we're going to do with it in the future. So yeah, I think it's vital.
It's difficult to add to much more to what you said there, Luke. I mean, I think you know, that whole sort of pan-government record of somebody, a patient or a citizen or whoever that, you know, individual is clearly a utopia. How quickly we get there, again, you know, it's going to be a journey, isn't it? I mean, we're seeing some of the sort of the Devo initiatives and some of the, you know, you see Manchester are collaborating quite well, aren't they, across government to try and drive some of these initiatives. If I may, I'll plug a product here. You know, we obviously do a lot with yourselves around the unstructured piece. I mean, this is very much where Isilon and soon to be PowerScale platforms would typically sit, you know, because clearly, you know, we have the ability to capture all of this data, which is mainly unstructured, and then work with sort of analytics partners like Cloudera, for example, to support the data management. You know, we're seeing some of this not across not pan government, if you like, but we certainly see that if you go back to the healthcare environment, whereby there's multiple use cases in some organisations. You know, if you take a large trust like you know, Manchester Foundation Trust, for example, you know, they have lots of different use cases for, you know, of unstructured data, be it, you know, medical imaging, the edge, genomics, file sharing, you know, pathology, you know, genomics. There's Hadoop. That, you know, there's lots of different use cases. And actually being able to sort of underpin with a platform like, you know, or PowerScale, you know, we can bring that all to bear and provide you know, an easy management access of all their data, you know. So we've been doing it anywhere within the organisations. How that scales out across government, you know, that's going to be a journey, isn't it?
Yeah, and James and I spoke previously about this as well, and being able to get that data closer to the clinicians so that when they need the information, they've got it at their fingertips, be it on a device or whatever they're using when they're in front of that patient, but also being able to make sure that data is true and it's able to reach that clinician at the right time, and ultimately driving that kind of efficiency through the hospital, so that ultimately you're able to deliver a real clinical benefit and operational throughout the hospital by doing so. And it's great to see so many trusts putting a real emphasis on digital transformation, and a lot of that is driven by some of these services that you mentioned around PACS and EHR that are now up in the cloud, but the tremendous amounts of data that are being created as part of that, and as you mentioned, your infrastructure platform there can really make a big difference on kind of storing it efficiently and giving those scale-up platforms real access to the data across the board.
From my perspective, I kind of feel like we're a bit of a crossing point with technology, where lots of the ambitions that have probably been around for quite a period of time, the technology's more and more emerging that can underpin them. So the facility to create large data lakes, the facilities then to utilise, I guess, software to manage that data and to make it more transient between services is actually available. It's how the process would work and how different organisations can handle the management and, I guess, the security and those elements are still to be seen. But I actually kind of feel we're at a bit of a crossing point where technology is almost meeting the requirement. It's just having somebody who's invested to that level of complexity, I think, at the moment. Would you kind of agree to that? It just feels technology is caught up with a lot of the questions.
I was just going to say, I would absolutely agree. And we shouldn't underestimate that the NHS has been around for an awfully long time, as we know, and in many ways it has been set in those ways for a long time, and it's nice to see that they're embracing the use of technology and embracing things like, you know, the paperless environment, and trying to encourage the use of devices for holding that data in sharing it throughout the hospital. So I do think that actually the technology's been there for quite a while, but now it's a case of the NHS Trust really deciding how best to invest and really seeing the benefits from doing so.
Well, absolutely right. I mean, if you think about it, I mean, the technology has always been there, hasn't it? And I think, James, you're suggesting that we've sort of gone past that inflection point where it becomes more mainstream. You know, I mentioned before our CTO, Arshad Farhad, he recently wrote a blog, and he talked about, you know, digital health technology adoptions in the new era. And he listed five out, and I'll just shout these out, because there's nothing new. But these are now going to become more the norm in the new world post-COVID. Data analytics, you know, we've been talking about, you know, predictive analytics at Dell Technologies for years and years, right? But, you know, the first, when you see Chris Whitty and Patrick Vallance, isn't it, on the TV next to Boris, you know, they're talking about the science, they're talking about the analytics, you know, and, you know, go back 2 years, you know, you wouldn't have an IT guy during the pandemic talking about being front and centre, would you? It just wouldn't happen, even though it was there in the background underpinning decision making. You know, it's front of mind, it's front of centre now, do you know what I mean? And it's top table, right? You know, it's where we, as IT professionals, it's where we've always wanted to be, have our profession, our industry, you know, and you see that with the top CIOs in the NHS. You know, they are fully-fledged board members now, you know. Look at some of the other things that Arsha mentioned. He talks about 3D printing. Again, nothing really new, but again, if people can now use that to, you know, produce face shields and swabs for ventilator parts and things, again, this is this is getting going mainstream. We talked about remote working previously on the call. Telemedicine, you know what I mean? I mean, telemedicine has been around the NHS for a long time, but it's only really since, you know, everyone had to call, I've not had to call it, thank the Lord, but you know, the, I was going to say 911, but you know, the non-999 number.
111, yeah.
111, yeah, 111, forgive me. So, you know, everyone getting used to a different way of working, not going into hospital, and leveraging telemedicine. Yeah, of course, there may be some side effects of people not being seen, but again, it's getting used to that kind of technology, and also for the, you know, for the radiologists, pathologists, you know, the people who are scarce within the NHS, being able to leverage these kind of technologies, you know, for diagnosis. So, like, Luke, you talked about AI, right? Artificial intelligence, again. It's been around for a long time, but if you look at some of the stuff that the likes of Ballybarber are doing around COVID detection and using AI to look at, you know, CT scans and people who've had coronavirus, they can get, you know, really high levels of accuracy in matters of seconds. You know, if we start believing and making this technology more mainstream, it's not going to replace, you know, healthcare professionals. It's going to almost like augment their skills and increase the, you know, the likelihood of you know, a complete diagnosis,
or allow them to see more patients and get more through the books every year. You get almost getting more bang for your buck, if you kind of pardon the phrase. But within a healthcare setting, these guys are the top of the tree, and absolutely, if you can get them seeing 10 or 20% more patients per day without expecting them to work longer hours or expecting them to do any additional work, then that's got to be of benefit.
Absolutely. I mean, the final point, and again, we have common customers here in that research space. You know, genomics, gene sequencing. You know, this is going to be key in that sort of race to find the vaccine to you know, to COVID-19, hopefully, and all the work that's been doing then. Again, genomic medicine has been around for a while. You know, we partnered together around the 100,000 genome project, haven't we? You know, through the pilot, and that was launched, what, 2013, 2014,
yeah,
a long time ago. You know, this kind of technology is going to become more and more mainstream, because it has to be. And if we're going to find a cure for coronavirus, you know, people like and these organisations, Oxford University, are going to be at the forefront, and they're going to be using these technology adaptations. And they're not new. It just now means that they have the chance to shine, and we'll hopefully see more and more investments. You know, ultimately help our customers and help ourselves.
No, fantastic.
Yeah, I've not read your... the blog that you mentioned, James, but I was sitting here ticking off my list, because I'd also made a little list myself, just to kind of bring up on the call and see which ones of those did come up. So that's interesting, the analytics one, the collaboration in telemedicine. I think we've seen that obviously in the past couple of months jump forward, particularly for the kind of non-emergency parts of the NHS. But 3 or 4 years ago, I did a project to deliver telemedicine to enable kids with epilepsy to not have to go into the community hospital. There was a certain amount of stigma involved. It involved them being taken out of school. It was a pain for the parents. There was obviously additional charges for transport and parking and all of these things. So it was all geared around the patient and how it would benefit the patient by them not having to go into hospital, and the majority of the consultations could be done over video, and the clinicians were able to see 30% more patients. The patients were 100% more satisfied with their experience, because the kids can literally sit at home and undertake consultation. Can't get the words out. Undertake that consultation, and you think actually it's kind of been flipped on its head now. So that was for the benefit of the patient, but exactly the same technology is being utilised now to say, well, the clinicians are working from home. We now need to see more patients remotely. So the technology is there. We're just using it in a slightly different way.
So just maybe just my last question, but sort of almost extending my own question then. Is it more about adoption? So we've always had the technology. I do think in terms of cost, I think cost technology is more available cost-wise now, or is more cost-efficient than it's ever been. But has COVID maybe just driven us to think about how we adopt technology more now and made it more readily adoptable? Because that's lots of these opportunities, lots of these programs you talk about are there. Maybe they have been there for a while. It's just maybe us accepting that level of change.
I think, James, it was on Twitter, wasn't it? There was a slogan. You know, what were the top? What were the three things that sort of fast track digital transformation in the NHS? You know, and then there was option one, there was option two, and the last one was COVID-19. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
There's probably more been done in terms of digitising and driving transformation across some of these areas in the last 3 months, and there probably has been in the last 2 years. Do you know what I mean? And it's been forced upon everybody, primarily to work from home, and including the NHS and key clinicians and stuff like that. So what is the new norm as hopefully we come out of this and we don't have a wave two? It's going to be a different place. But I mean, to what Luke mentioned before, the fact that investment has been made in the short term to allow things like telemedicine, so consultants can work from home and do their referrals from home, and it's online, so that it's like the Northern Cancer Alliance in the northeast of England can pathologists don't have to drive from Cumbria to Hartlepool to review somebody else's diagnosis, once or twice a week. Their capacity can increase 40%, and therefore their diagnosis and early capture of people potentially with cancer is quicker, and people live longer. Do you know what I mean? There's got to be some good that comes out of this. And hopefully, that's going to be this.
No, fantastic sentiment, James.
I would agree, and it's been great to see that by working with our partners and utilising the services that we've all kind of within the technology industry maybe taken advantage of and certainly been aware of for a number of years, we've been able to react really quickly to those requirements from the government and the NHS to say, well, how would you do this? Well, we've got a stack of solutions that we could stand up pretty quickly that will enable you to do this, this, and this, and it will enable you to keep doing your business as usual during what is, obviously a global pandemic, which is quite remarkable, really.
Stella, I mean, it has been an eye-opening period. In terms of the call today, guys, I just want to say it's just been fantastic. Really, really insightful, really well articulated. So thank you both. What I wanted to ask, what I will do is obviously share both your details. I'm sure you're both comfortable. Anybody who listens to this and wants to reach out and get in contact from a customer's perspective and ask further questions, you're both available for that. Because obviously there's a lot of insights, a lot more to hear, I think.
Sure.
Absolutely. Yeah, anytime.
Thank you. So for today, guys, really, really appreciate it. So thank you ever so much for the time.
You're welcome.
No worries, James. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you.